Hi, thank you so much for downloading this episode of Journey to a Dream, which is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. This podcast series is all about conversations with people who love bike racing, and specifically people who love racing over here on the Isle of Man. And our guest today was a newcomer back in 2015 on the mountain course. As we'll hear, that first year was an absolute challenge for so many reasons. But there is undoubtedly something about the racer mentality, which is just all about resilience, perseverance, and ultimately determination to really do what you set out to.
Hi, I am Don Gilbert. I've been racing in the Manx Grand Prix for the last few years. My dad's an ex-policeman and he used to have a friend of his that used to come round for a cup of tea every now and then. And I remember being fascinated with a police bike, and we got a couple of pictures of me. Just I wouldn't leave it alone and I'd sit on it and stuff. So that's probably my earliest memory of a bike, to be fair.
And when your parents or your dad was aware of this, was that something they were okay with, your interest in bikes?
No, not really. Yeah, no, he's always been quite against it, to be fair. He always said to me as a kid, he was like, he obviously knew I had a bit of an obsession with bikes and stuff. And he would always say to me, well, you're not going to get a bike when you're older, are you? And I'd always turn around and be like, no, I wouldn't dream of it. But deep down, I knew that I wanted to, and that was going to go pretty much against everything he said about bikes.
So when did you get a bike then?
When I was a kid, I was still in primary school, so I must have been about sort of 9 or 10 years old. A mate of mine, George Fleming, he had a little PW80 Yamaha, and he wasn't really bothered about it. And I remember nagging my mum and dad like hell to get this bike. And I remember we paid 50 quid for it. I think it was like a good 2 or 3 years worth of birthdays and Christmases came into one, and they eventually got me this bike. So I used to ride it around, and we lived opposite like a woodland and stuff. And yeah, I used to riff around on that as a kid. I can't really remember what happened to that bike, but it didn't last very long. And before I knew it, I think my mum and dad knew I was getting a bit into it, so they got rid of it pretty sharpish, or I probably did something wrong and they decided that the bike had to go. But anyway, that's when I first sort of got on a bike, but I didn't really get back on one for quite a few years after that, even though I was like desperate to get on one. I didn't really until I was a bit older.
So you didn't do much competing or any competing then when you were a child?
No, I didn't actually do my first sort of track day or race or anything until I was about 21 years old. So I spent most of my sort of teenage years and childhood not riding bikes. But then the minute I sort of turned 16, I got a bike on the road and stuff. So I rode around on the road a bit from the age of 16 onwards. But then, yeah, I couldn't get my sort of stuff together to go racing until I was 21. So I actually had quite a life before I started racing, to be fair. So, yeah, it's quite rare, really, because a lot of the guys that are racing now, they've all sort of, a lot of them have done it since they were quite young. So, yeah, I was quite late to it, to be honest.
And do you think you've been at a disadvantage at all because of that?
I don't know, really. Like, I guess if I'm competing against guys that have done it since they were, like, you know, a lot younger than me, then I probably would be at a bit of a disadvantage. But I don't really look at it like that. I mean, you know, I try to do everything to make up for the loss of time. I mean, I do a lot of motocross and stuff. Been trying to play catch up since I started racing, so I've been pretty committed since I managed to get out on track, to be honest.
So when you then were taking it a little bit more seriously, I'm just intrigued about what that conversation might have been like with the family.
Yeah, so it was actually me and a friend of mine, my mate Craig Scott. He's really keen on starting racing and stuff, and so was I, but I didn't really have any money at the time. At that stage of my life where I was going out all the time and just being a bit of a plonker, and he was an electrician and he had a few quid, and he said to me, look, I want to start racing. He was like, I'll lend you the money to get a bike and stuff if you're up for, you know, doing it with me, sort of thing. And I'll never forget him for doing that, because I think if he never did that, like, I might not have ever gone racing. I don't know. But I took him up on the offer and picked up a bike, and I actually didn't tell my parents about it. I just put it in the garage, and I put like I think it was a bed sheet or something over in the garage. Didn't notice for about 6 months.
I am going straight to my garage when I get home, because God knows what's in there. Right, go on.
My mum was pretty cool with it, however my dad, he wasn't overly keen. And do you know what? They just thought that it's just another sort of fad or whatever. He'll get bored of it and won't really pursue it or something like that. So they weren't really that bothered. But then I think the sort of penny dropped after, like, you know, a half a season of racing. I was going out and doing as much as I could. I think they were like, oh, hang on a minute, he's actually taking this quite seriously, which is quite a surprise to him, I think.
And the other thing, though, Don, is that this is such an expensive sport, and presumably every single penny you were earning, if you were sort of working around that time, must have just gone into it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. The stuff me and my mate Craig, we got up to go racing, like, I mean, you know, we were scrimping and scraping and, yeah, all sorts of stuff to make sure that we could go racing. I mean, that's just how it was like back then, you know, and it was expensive. However, when I first started, it was all done on the budget. So, you know, if I can afford to buy tyres, I would just go with what tyres I had on. And to be honest with you, I was sort of wobbling around at the back of most races, so I didn't really need good stuff back then. I was just going around just trying to figure it all out and how to do it, basically. So yeah, it was done on the cheap, but it still required every penny that I could get my hands on, to be honest.
And even at that point then, how aware were you of what was happening over here race wise on the Isle of Man?
I knew, obviously, like I remember growing up watching the TT and the British Superbikes and stuff like that. Like I was well aware of it, and I mean, to be honest, I didn't really think I was ever going to be probably good enough to go across to the island and do that. It was on my radar, but I was like, just see what happens, and you know, see where I ended up. To be honest, like I wasn't really too convinced that I would end up being able to do it. I was aware of what was going on over there, and it was a dream, but it felt like a little bit out of my reach at the time, to be honest. So I was a bit sort of skeptical as to not whether or not I'd be able to do it. But here I am. I've managed to do it now. So yeah.
So how did that happen then?
Well, I started racing in 2012, and then I did two seasons on a little Formula 400 thing, Honda VFR 400. And then I moved up to a 600, and I saved up some money, and my uncle gave me a few quid towards a 600, because he could see I was taking it quite seriously. And then I was like, right, okay, first things first, I need to go and do a road race if I'm thinking about the Isle of Man. So I went to Oliver's Mount in 2014. I can't remember how I did. I don't think I did particularly well, but it was, I think I did reasonable. I think I was sort of mid-pack in the B race or something, 600s. And then I sent myself the target of the following year, 2015, to book in for the Manx, basically. And that's exactly what I did. So I just sort of jumped in the deep end and just went for it, just to see what happened, really.
And had you been over here before?
No, never been over to Isle of Man. No, never, ever. Wasn't able to, really. I was spending all my money on racing. Ideally, I wanted to go over and do some laps and stuff before I went as a newcomer in 2015, but I just couldn't do it. So, yeah, it was just playing PlayStation games and watching onboards, to be honest. It was all I could do before I sort of came over and raced it, but yeah.
And at that point, I mean, we're only talking about 10 years ago, but at that point, were they sort of as big on the newcomer events and the weekends preparing newcomers as they are now?
Not as much. I remember I had to take a trip over to the Isle of Man before the Manx for the newcomers weekend, and that was pretty much it, really. They didn't really test your knowledge on the circuit. I mean, my knowledge of the circuit was pretty bad, to be honest. I mean, I didn't take to learning the track naturally at all. Like, I really struggled with it. And even to the point where I remember going there to race as a newcomer in 2015, I honestly didn't really know which way the road went at the time. Quite scary, really. But I probably was a bit naive, really. I thought, oh, it's all right. I'll figure it out. You know, I'll get there and I'll get my bearings and it'll be all right. But actually, it didn't quite work out like that at all. I wished I'd done a lot more homework before I went there, to be honest. When I did the newcomers weekend, I went with my mate Dan Anderson, a really good friend from racing, probably my best friend from racing actually. And we also met a good mate of mine, Gary Vines, over at newcomers weekend. So we was like three of us going around and stuff. And I was aware that they both knew quite a lot more than me about the circuit. Like, they were reading off names of corners, and they were like, oh, you know, you go through there and you end up at Ballarat Bridge and stuff. I just remember being like, I ain't got a clue what these guys are talking about. I feel well out of my depth. But when we did the speed controlled lap with the Travis Marshall, I mean, everyone pretty much disappeared, and I was like, shit, I don't know where I'm going. Bit of a humbling experience, to be honest with you. I was a bit like, wow, I really have thrown myself in the deep end. I felt like at the time I did as much as I could, but really I didn't. Looking back now, I mean, yeah, I could have done a lot more homework, but you know, I turned up there with what I had done, and really, had my knowledge have been tested, they probably would have said, no, you need to come back next year once you've done a bit more homework. But yeah, like, it, to be honest, it was a bit of a disaster that year anyway. It all went a bit wrong. So looking back, I wish I'd done more homework. But then equally, I suppose you learn from times like that. You have to be respectful of the place and stuff. And you know, if you want to do well at something, you really have to commit to putting the graft in.
And so did you qualify for the race in that year?
Yeah, I qualified for the race, and I can't remember. I think I might have finished, like, I think I was mid-pack, because back then there was a newcomers race. I think it was a newcomers A race or something. It was basically all 600s, and I think I finished like mid-pack, somewhere like that. So it wasn't overly bad, but it wasn't good. Like, it wasn't what I was expecting to do around there. Like, I thought I'd have done a bit better, but at the end of the day, I had a lot more work to do, really, before I could start going a bit quicker. But I did the newcomers race, finished that, and then I was in the senior race, which is the 600 race. Yeah, it was a bit of a nightmare, really. I had a big crash. Well, actually, I crashed twice over there that year. I crashed straight into the Craig the first time, so I outbraked myself, which quite a few people do. Went straight into the pub, over the barriers, nearly into the photographer. I think that was in practice week. And then in the senior race, I was going down into the Craig, and I got overtaken by a guy called Nicolas Porte, who was a French rider. He was a bit quicker than me, and he come past me going into the Craig. And then as he caught me up, I thought, oh, I'll stick behind him and see if I can stick with him for the next lap. And I think it was on lap two of four. And coming out the Craig, he looks like he went down a gear instead of up a gear. And I crashed straight into the back of him and got trapped in the back of the bike. And I got dragged down the road by about half a mile. And yeah, ended in tears, literally. Basically, where the wheel goes, where the wheel's on the swing arm, where it sort of goes round, my leg got trapped. Somehow my body got trapped in the back of his bike. And my leg got wedged between the wheel and the swing arm to the point where it literally like locked up his back wheel. And he didn't know I was in the back at first. So he was trying to go carry on. But then he realised I was in the back, and I was like bouncing off the verges, off the side of the track, and it was a bit of a mess. Really, it's on YouTube actually. The crash, there's some footage of it, but yeah, I don't like watching it because I can hear me screaming. It's been horrible, but yeah, I had to have two skin graft operations, and one of them went wrong, and then they're talking about having to chop my leg off, and it was just a bit of a nightmare, really. But I did recover from it in the end.
How do you go through something like that and think, yeah, I'm going to go back there again?
Well, I came home from that. Obviously, had these operations on my leg and stuff, and I sort of had a bit of time to process it all. And I was like, I think that was when the penny dropped. I realised I was probably not quite experienced enough. Like, hadn't really been racing, hadn't done a huge amount of racing before that. And I was like, yeah, I probably jumped the gun a little bit on that. So I wanted to go back. I definitely knew I wanted to go back, but I wasn't going to go straight back. I was like, right, I think I need to get a bit more racing experience and stuff. So I had quite a few years out. I didn't actually go back until, when did I go back? I think it was 2022. I came back in 2022. So I had like 7 years out, 6 or 7 years out of it.
Recovery-wise, after what had happened, I mean, obviously it sounds like it was pretty significant and you had to go through quite a lot treatment-wise. Is everything okay now?
Yeah, fine. It looks like I've got a big chunk out of the back of my right leg, but to be fair, they did a really good job of the operation. And it's quite funny because literally the day before the accident, me and my mate Dan, who I was out there racing with, Dan Anderson, we went and got matching tattoos on the back of our legs, and it was the three legs of the Isle of Man. And where I'd had the crash, it ripped off half of the tattoo. So I've actually only got, if anyone sees the back of my leg, I've only got two legs of the Isle of Man. Quite funny looking back, really. I'm fully recovered. It did take about a year or so before I could properly straighten my leg out, because when they do the skin graft, the skin goes really tight and it was right on the bend behind my knee, basically. So it took me ages to sort of like stretch the skin so I could fully straighten my leg and stuff. So, but yeah, I'm fine now.
Made the decision to come back in, what you say, 2022. Just curious as to what it's like when you go past that point where something so horrible has happened and you have to go past there again.
Yeah, well, I think I had a few years to kind of forget about it. I think I had like 3 years of racing, like short circuit stuff. I went and raced abroad, actually, in an international classic Grand Prix. So I kind of like had a decent excuse not to go back because I had this opportunity to go and race this 250 GP bike classic thing. So I was like, right, OK, I'll do this for a few years and get a bit more experience and stuff. And then, you know, my idea was going to go back in, I think it was when was lockdown? I think it was just before, yeah, lockdown happened. And then obviously I didn't get a chance to go there. So I kind of lost quite a few years. That's why it was such a gap between obviously then and coming back sort of thing. The years that I didn't come, I actually came out and watched the TT. So I'd come out with a few friends and we'd take our dirt bikes and do all the green lanes and stuff. I actually went to probably most, well, not every, obviously didn't go to every corner, but I went pretty much most sectors of the track. So I kind of got an understanding and I was watching other riders go through. So I had a few years of watching and stuff like that. So I was sort of processing everything just from the sidelines, really, before I came back. And also I did quite a lot of laps at the same time. So yeah, I built up a lot more knowledge in the time that I wasn't there racing.
Alluded to the fact that it's, you know, it's so expensive and every single penny you earn ends up going towards this. How did you find the whole sort of getting sponsorship and people to support you?
Hard, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah, sponsorship's been, you know, you have people that help you out. Sort of, I've had sort of small sponsors. You might get a few free things or something like that. But in general, it's mainly all self-funded. So yeah, I was just working my nuts off really and started up a little business back home and tried to find a way of earning the money to go racing, basically, because I don't really like asking. You know, you sort of think if someone wants to sponsor you, they're sort of coming to you. I don't want to beg people to go racing. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm very fortunate enough to be able to go racing. And if I want to do it, I need to pay for it myself. And if I get to a stage where people will approach me for a bit of sponsorship, then happy days. But yeah, it's all just from hard work, really.
And I guess having your own business gives you that little bit of flexibility, because if you go and racing a lot, then you do need a considerable amount of time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, 100%. That's why, I mean, I've never actually had a proper job, to be fair. It's I've always just done my own thing. So yeah, if I want to go racing every weekend, I'll just pack my stuff up and away I go, and I haven't really got an answer to anyone. So I think a lot of guys are like that in the paddock, to be honest with you. To hold a full-time job and do the racing, I'm sure there is people out there that do it, but I don't know how you could, if you're going to do it properly and you're going to spend the time doing the meetings, I just don't think it. I think it'd be almost impossible alongside a full-time job.
And again, you know, people talk about the sort of sacrifices that they make going out and doing all the normal sort of stuff that people do, and holidays and whatever probably just don't feature.
Yeah, like holidays. I mean, I went to Crete last year. That was the first proper holiday I've had since I started racing, to be honest with you, because you kind of, when you go away racing, that you kind of treat that as your holidays as well. But the thing is, racing's like more stressful than going to work, so it's not exactly like any downtime, really.
And how do you manage that sort of side of it as well? Because, you know, there's all the stress of the preparation and whatever. And I don't know whether you're the sort of person who gets really nervous before you go out and whatever. But, you know, that is a lot of stuff that's going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a lot to take on board. But I think you kind of, over the years and the more experience you get, you kind of know what you're up against. So the only time it gets really stressful is like when things aren't going well. Like, you know, you put a lot of time and effort into, I don't know, going to the Northwest or something like that, or all the Manx. And, you know, if you're up against like problems that you're struggling to get over, like with the bike or whatever, it is quite stressful, to be fair. But the thing is, there's no point getting yourself too excited about anything because you can't control it. You just got to do your best. And sometimes, unfortunately, we're racing, sometimes it doesn't work out. So you have to roll with the punches and just go with it and see what happens, really.
And, you know, I think that brings us to the side of the race in which it is really difficult, because it is a sport of two sides, isn't it? There are the incredible highs and then there are the real lows. And you mentioned Gary Vines, and he died in an incident last year. And I wonder, from the point of view of obviously somebody who was obviously quite close to him, how do you get through that?
Yeah, that was a proper kicking the nuts, that was, to be honest, because yeah, Gary was like, I don't have an awful lot of friends, like close friends, that are in the paddock and that I race against, but yeah, Gary was he was like by far, you know, my sort of best friend in racing. Like, you know, we used to have such a good laugh, and we were both newcomers in 2015, so, and we were pitched next to each other, so ever since then, like, we just got the bond and we were good friends more or less since then, really. And yeah, like that was a really tough time, like, yeah. And also, like, it's obviously, it's a shock, isn't it, when something like that happens and stuff. It sort of brings it does bring it home a little bit. And yeah, I had like quite a lot of questions to ask, like whether or not I wanted to continue and stuff like that, like, you know. So yeah, you do have a conflict of thoughts, like, when, you know, when you're up against something like that. And that's like the first time that something like that's happened to me. So yeah, it was quite a lot to process, that was, to be fair. It still doesn't really sink in to this day, really, that, you know, that happened and stuff. So we all love racing and stuff, but when something like that happens, it does make you question it. And problem is, you know, I spent the last, 20s? Yeah, I've spent, you know, over a decade of my life, you know, sort of dedicating my life to this sport. And I kind of feel like I need to carry on, really. It's quite hard to explain. I can't explain it to anyone, really. But yeah, it's quite an odd feeling, really, but it ends up defining who you are this when you're racing like this.
And I guess for somebody, again, who doesn't really get why anybody would want to do it, it's like, it's trying to work out, you know, is it just an adrenaline thing? Is it because it's such a challenge? I don't know. What does it say about your personality that this is what you are deciding to do with your life?
Well, me personally, I don't really go racing for the adrenaline buzz, even though it is like you. It's more the, like, the achievement side of things. I predominantly, up until this point, you know, sort of couple of years, I've done all my own bikes, like, generally making it happen for myself. And a lot of times it doesn't go right and, you know, you end up not achieving anything. But then every now and then you get a bit of a glimpse of, you know, you have a good meeting, you get a good, you know, you might win something or get a good result. And it's that, like, sense of achievement from all the hard work and all the shit times, it makes it just that much sweeter for me. So I do it because, yeah, you're basically testing yourself. You know, I feel like every time I go racing, I'm pushing myself physically and mentally to my very limit. And that's where I get a buzz from it, is when I do well. Not very often it happens, but I sort of sit back and make myself proud, don't you, if you have a good result and stuff. So that's where I get the real buzz from it.
And so when it comes to racing over here, have you achieved, do you think, yet what you want to?
No, but I don't think many people do, to be honest. Maybe some, but no, not for me. Like, you know, I still feel relatively inexperienced around the Isle of Man mountain course, to be honest. So I made a massive step this year. I nearly did 119 mile an hour, and previous to that point I'd only done like 112 before. So I'd like, yeah, made a huge step this year, and I've always wanted to do the TT, so I've probably got closer to the step of being able to do the TT now. So then once I do the TT, then I'm going to be like, oh, okay, I want to get a top 20 or a top 15 or something like that. Me personally, I'm never happy. You could always do better. I think that's the addictive part about racing for me, is that you always want more.
And when do you reckon the TT will be on the horizon then?
I'm not too sure. Maybe possibly next year. I think I've probably done enough to warrant an entry to the TT for next year. But me and a few of the other guys at the Manx this year, like, the senior race was really close, and I'm a bit of a conflict of, I'm really decided yet, do I go back to the Manx and try and get a podium or something in the senior race and then go to the TT, or just jump straight to the TT? I'm not really too sure, but it'd probably be, if it's not next year, it'll be the year after, I would have thought.
But you've got other stuff happening before then, because you're heading further afield. Is it November?
Yeah, the Macau Grand Prix, yeah. I just got the news for that the other day, actually. So, yeah, I was really, really chuffed a bit to get the invite to race Macau. So that was like, everything seems to be happening quite quick for me this year. So that's next on the horizon. I'm racing at Oliver's Mount this coming weekend for the Gold Cup. Yeah, and then it's going to be the Macau Grand Prix. So, yeah, I'm not going to have a lot of time to chill out, really.
So what sort of things do you need to get sorted before Macau then?
Basically, logistically, it's quite difficult. So you've got to get bikes out there, and I'm still not 100% sure what bikes I'm going to be taking or what bike I'm going to be taking. You have to have a spare engine, otherwise you're not allowed to race. So I've got to organise a spare engine. So yeah, there's quite a lot of stuff to sort out. And then obviously I'll be taking a few lads out there as well. So you've got to organise them. So there's loads, quite a lot to get organised out there.
So paid holiday on you then?
Well, it sounds like it, doesn't it? Yeah. All of a sudden, I seem to have gained quite a few friends recently.
And what do you expect from Macau? Because again, sort of going through that newcomer process almost again.
Yeah, well, it sort of caught me off guard a bit because I wasn't expecting to be there this year. So I haven't really done a huge amount of homework up until this point. But since I got the news, I've been flat out watching on boards, and that's really all you can do, because obviously you can't just sort of fly out there and do a few laps on in a hired car. It doesn't really work like that. So I'm just going to have to do as much studying as I can and go out there with no expectations. And, it'd be a learning year for me, and keep my head down, keep out of trouble, just go there and do my thing, and hopefully get invited back next year for maybe a bit more of a stab at it.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Because it's so far away, like you say, you can't just sort of pop over, but you need to give yourself enough time once you get over there to acclimatise, and I don't know what the time difference is and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. I was speaking to my mate Ryan Whitehall. He went over as a newcomer last year, just sort of picking his brains a little bit as to what to expect over there. But I think the key thing is you just need to be mega organised, make sure you've got everything, ticked all the boxes, and you don't want to be going out there and have left something at home, because you're a long way from anywhere probably. And I don't want to get out there and be like, we've got a problem with the bike or anything like that. So I just want to make sure everything's buttoned up, belt and braces, ready to have a little run around there really and see what happens.
And does that work for you? Are you quite an organised sort of person?
No, not really. I do try.
You need a big list.
I know he'll be listening to this podcast, and if I turn around and say, I'm organised, everyone's just going to give me so much stick. So, I'm not the most organised person. I kind of just wing everything, but there's something else I've got to wing, really. So I'm all right. I think it'll be fine.
It'll be fine. The other thing that is really quite important now is being quite public about what you've been doing and putting your stuff on social media and whatever. And you do seem to post quite a lot. Is that something you enjoy doing, or is it just another thing that you think, have to make sure I get that done?
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, it's only of recent I've kind of been posting more stuff. I mean, I've never really been that good at it. But the thing is, I'm looking at all the guys that I'm racing against, and everyone's doing it now. That's the thing. So you sort of have to follow suit and post a bit more. If you've got some cool stuff to talk about, then I guess you should really be sharing it around. Otherwise, no one's going to know you've been doing it. And equally, when it comes to help and sponsors and all that sort of stuff, the first thing they look at is how you're getting on all your social media. But I'll be honest, I'm not a huge fan of social media. I'm sort of forcing myself to try and crack on and promote it a bit. Yeah, it doesn't come naturally to me.
So have you got a racing page that people can follow you on?
Not really, no. I've just got my personal page, really. Yeah, my personal Instagram page and Facebook. I mean, that's all I have, really. But only racer stuff I post on there, really.
And obviously, the other thing about racing over here, which you might not have in Macau, I don't know what the weather's like over there, but obviously this year there was a disappointment when that final race had to be cancelled. And I guess, even though you've not been over here that many times, getting used to that side of racing when things don't go to plan for conditions that nobody can do anything about.
Yeah, it's a little bit annoying, to be honest. That's the only problem with the Isle of Man. The weather's pretty pants, isn't it? But it's one of those things. It's just all part of it, though, isn't it? You go over there, you've got to be fully prepared. So, like, pretty much every year, apart from this year that I've done the Manx, I've probably done not much more than 10 laps the entire time I've been there. So that holds you at a bit of a disadvantage if you're not laps in practice, but everyone's in the same position, so you can't really use that as an excuse, really.
And also, the other thing that you've done over here, the other road race, is the Southern 100. Obviously a little bit of a different experience, but it is just a meeting that everybody who takes part in it seems to absolutely love.
The Southern 100, I didn't go there this year, unfortunately, but I've been there in recent years and stuff, so yeah, I love the 700. It's a really cool meeting, actually. Yeah, I've met some good friends at the 700, like Frankie Stennett. We had a good race a few years ago. I think I was like 5 going for the win at one time. It was, it was wicked. I'd like to say a few thank yous to some guys that have helped me out recently. AKR Racing for letting me use the Honda this year at the Manx Grand Prix. That bike was faultless the whole week and allowed me to nearly do 119 miles an hour at the Manx this year. So thank you to Heather and Alex for that. Drake's Garden Services, Nutbourne Landscapes and Construction, Isle of Man Bike Storage, Demon Tweaks, Ugly & Co., WG Tyres, QED, and Perry Leask at Leask Racing for looking after me on the suspension side of things.
Okay, well, best of luck this weekend and also with Macau as well. And do me a favour, just go and write your list now and just make sure you haven't missed anything off it.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
Don Gilbert, who is in need of a very large piece of paper and a highlighter by the sounds of it. Follow Don by going to the links on the podcast page. His Facebook and Instagram pages are on there, and we wish him all the very best this weekend and also for Macau as well. Journey to a Dream is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance, and you can find out more about them by visiting their website. It's kawasaki-insurance.co.uk. We're also supported by the Andreas Racing Association, and the link to their Facebook page is on the podcast page too. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we'll talk to you again soon.